week, Cookeville Mayor Ricky Shelton will call to order his final meeting as mayor of the city of Cookeville. No doubt when the history of the community is written, these last 4 years in particular will be some of the most eventful that any mayor has had to deal with. And that's before we ever deal with the controversy surrounding Shelton and Cookeville Regional Medical Center. Tonight, we take a look back at Shelton's tenure as mayor, some of the highs and the lows of the last 8 years.
It is rapidly approaching. A lot of emotions, a lot of mixed emotions, but a lot of great memories as well.
When you say mixed emotions, I'm sure you will enjoy having some of your time back.
Absolutely. To me, this is the way our system is set up. It's not necessarily a job, but I treated it like it was a job, and I did that because I have great passion for our city. And, you know, my dad taught me if it's a job's worth doing, it's worth doing right. So I poured my heart and soul into being mayor and to trying to elevate that position, elevate what it means to be mayor, and I think the fruits of those labor are the things that we've been able to get accomplished over the last 8 years.
Why did you decide to run in the first place?
You know, been asked that a lot of times. I grew up, you know, my father was in public service, served in various roles, volunteer fireman, and you know, served as the fire chief and police chief and safety commissioner, interim city manager in various roles, and kind of grew up around that and seeing that and saw what a difference, you know, one person could make. And it certainly drove me to, you know, get involved in the community. And when I speak to people, they'll ask me stuff like that. And I always say, you know, get involved in things that you have some type of concern, care, or passion about, and then see where that leads. And that's kind of what I did, you know, served on a few committees and a few boards and doing different things. And I thought, you know, I'd really like to do this and craft and see what I could do to make a difference for our city. And, you know, first ran in 2002 and won a seat on the council, ran again in six and stayed on the council then, and, you know, rolled off and took 4 years off and decided to run again. And my wife and I talked about it. Didn't even know if I'd get elected. You know, I'd been out of office 4 years and then received the most votes. And so, you know, became mayor. And then when I ran again in 2018, was honored with, you know, the largest vote total ever and the largest spread ever.
Are you done?
For now, but you know, I don't want to say never again. I'm still passionate about it. I have a great passion for serving and for making a difference and leading and those kind of things. So you know, I'll continue to pray about it and seek God's guidance and wisdom and obviously talk to my wife and our family and see what's best for us in the future there. But certainly don't want to say never, but and we'll be open to what the Lord leads me to do or get involved in. And if He is leading me, then hopefully He'll lead my wife to that same decision, and then we can arrive at that together.
What is the sacrifice like for a mayor, for a city council member, for someone, a county commissioner? What is the sacrifice like for the family?
It's a lot. And again, you pretty much, you've always heard the saying, you get in something, what you get out of it, what you put into it. And when I was on the council the first two times, you know, I was involved and I did things, but I didn't like wear it on my sleeve like 24/7. And then when I ran and became mayor, you know, I was like, wow, okay, this is a huge responsibility. And so I immediately just started, you know, driving from that seat of like, this is such an amazing opportunity, but such a responsibility, and treated it like it was that, you know, spent literally full-time hours doing it. Had a job at the time that would allow me to do that. I traveled and had enough free time in between, you know, cars when I was driving and whatnot. And, you know, the mayor position also serves on like eight or nine different boards, as well. And you really can't have designees. That's your spot on there. And so, you know, trying to do all those, and it's a lot. And for your family, you know, time you're doing with that is time you're not with them. And you know, finding that balance, and probably the first 4 years might have been slightly out of balance because I was so driven to succeed and do it right and not give up and not give in. And I think as I look back, you know, sometimes you have to have a recalibration of yourself and say, and sometimes your wife helps you recalibrate and say, okay, you know, you've got to have some balance here. And that's just, you know, I'm a type A personality, so I'm driven, and I'm driven to succeed, and I'm driven to get things done. You know, there's people that let things happen. There's people that make things happen. I've always been one that wanted to make things happen. And so those are challenges, though, when you have that type of personality, because again, I know that my wife and my kids sacrifice because it's time away. And, you know, if you're going to put this as a job and put it, you know, do the things you need to do, then oftentimes I didn't do all the things. I tried to always be part of the event, and thankfully my wife was always making sure that, you know, helping craft and coordinate all those things, but it certainly, there was a sacrifice on their part.
Your wife, but also I think maybe even more so perhaps your kids, how do they deal with the negative part of this? Because doesn't matter what position you hold, not everybody agrees with the things that you do, especially in 2020.
That's true. And, you know, it's certainly having conversations with them and explaining, you know, I'm out there and, you know, these things are being said and kind of talking through that. Now, my twins are, you know, 16, they're juniors in high school. And so they certainly, you know, they sometimes want to get in the middle and help take care of things. But, you know, just setting them up and helping them understand. And I tell you, that's one thing, though, for me, and I see it in politics nationally, too, is, you know, it's one thing to say something about the candidate or, you know, the job they're doing, but to then bring family members into it who didn't have anything to do with it, oftentimes are innocent, just happened, you know, by association only. That's very not only unfair, it's wrong. And so I would hope that you know, our community stays better than that, and predominantly it has, but you certainly see that on a national level, and it's really bad because it's certainly not something that a family signs up for. I mean, obviously when you run for office or get involved in things, you kind of know part of the things that are involved, but that certainly shouldn't be one of them.
If you look back to when your tenure began to now, do you see a creeping of the national political perspective into our local politics, in that you're either this or you're that, and you're name calling and that sort of thing?
Yes, and it, you know, one thing Mayor Porter and I did right off is, you know, we established the social media part, which really had never been done before, and now both of our pages and social sites are really large, and we have a huge following in that. And so with that, people will always say things on a keyboard and type that they might not say to your face. And so we've gotten more than our fair share through those kinds of mediums. But also, I think overall, you know, we've been, as our community's growing, you just get other things happening when your community grows. I've always said your community, you're either growing or dying. So we should always try to grow. I mean, that's key. Your community has to grow, and we're going to grow, and it's making sure you maintain how you grow and the responsibility of that. But I really think what you see, it isn't so much necessarily sometimes the people that are doing that, because if leadership will kind of, you know, do what they're supposed to do, you can kind of keep things that don't really belong here at bay. But then it's oftentimes somebody in leadership that introduces these things and then brings that in, and then you've got to kind of like, okay, this isn't something for the city council to deal with, or this isn't something that we should be, you know. It's one thing to manage it, but it's another thing to try to instigate it from within like that. And that's that becomes a problem, and that's kind of not what local politics should be about.
Ricky Shelton, you have seen this community grow tremendously, but I think most people would agree that the growth is only going to escalate going forward. What are the biggest challenges you see in terms of managing that growth?
Well, first of all, infrastructure. That's one, you know, and a big word for roads and sidewalks and traffic flow. We certainly put a lot of things in place over the last, especially the last two or three years, really getting a lot of things set up. And we've got like $125 million in infrastructure projects, roads, sidewalks, utility expansions, and those kind of things that are either in process, in design, planned, or somewhere along the spectrum of to be done. So that's great. The other challenge that Cookeville has, and it's always had, is we have five state highways that run through us, Willow, Spring, Jefferson, Washington Avenue, and so one more.
111?
Yeah, 111. So we have these highways. Those are either state or TDOT or federal kind of thing. So you got to coordinate with that. Well, that's a whole different timeline than what you have. And so, you know, perfect example, traffic lights at 111 and I-40, how many years that took, and we requested and requested and requested. Willow Avenue, you know, finally, I remember in 2002 and 3, we requested that to be widened yet again. We requested it three more times. I believe under Governor Haslam, the gas tax that was funded, and they said it would be started within 10 years. So we're approaching near that time of sometime that, you know, Jefferson Avenue from Kentucky Fried Chicken out to 111. Now 17 years later, right away it's being expanded. And that's project started. So that's how long those type things take. And so really being have the foresight to look forward. You know, what's this going to look like in 10, 15, 20 years? What are we going to need? And trying to plan and do that. You know, government moves slow. It's designed to move slow, unfortunately. And that's one of the things I tried to do when I first came in, is like, how can we make this move faster? And, you know, coming from the business side, you know, things are more black and white, but government's mostly gray. And so you'd find the things that you can speed up and make go faster, and you do that. And then it kind of builds momentum and to get other things doing faster, but it just takes a lot of pushing and effort to do that.
It's so important because TDOT does control so much of the infrastructure in Cookeville itself. And yet I was in Nashville over the weekend and was thinking, wow, it's a Saturday and these interstates are clogged. And
yes.
So you understand TDOT's dilemma in
sure.
That you've got Nashville growing like no other city in America and has all of these needs.
It's prioritization of funds, and so exactly, they're growing exponentially faster than anybody else, so they should probably get more funds. And so it's a very, very small window.
But one of the things the council did was take some money
mm-hmm.
and set it aside to try to do some things yourself. It strikes me that that's going to be even more important as we move forward.
No, I think you're right, and that was that transportation fund where you could bond a bigger project, and you can do some pay-as-you-go projects within that money, that tax revenue that's flowing into that. It's extremely important. I think that'll pay dividends in the future. And then just getting those started, because those are things that we can do locally, either with our own forces, not so much, but bidding that out to some work and getting it done faster. But yeah, it's again just prioritization of that. But you've got to have a plan. You know, we had the 2030 plan. It's probably time now to do another one. I mean, we're only 8 years away from that, so we probably need a 2040, 2050 plan, because I think you got to look that far out to see what's needed.
Are we going to have to look at some things such as some new roads to try to take some of the issues off of Spring Street or off Willow Avenue?
You know, I think so. I mean, the history will now tell us that the northern bypass, the northern loop, as some would call it, back in 2000, when that was not done because of leadership, that's probably one of the worst things that ever happened to this community. because had that money that was sitting there to be spent, it was at that time $40 million, which in today's dollars is probably $100 million, would have been a road from 111 at Quinlan Lake Road all the way around the north and come in right at Tennessee Avenue. And so now you would have had that relief valve that would allow people when they're coming from north and they need to go through. And, you know, there was the opponents of that said, well, it's going to kill downtown. And not at all. It actually does the opposite. It allows people that want to go downtown to go downtown. It allows people that need to go around or go somewhere else to go somewhere else. And so it's interesting, you know, when people want to be against something, they find the argument for it and rationalize that. But that's not at all. So, again, I will say that's one of the worst things that ever happened to this community, that did not happen. And now you're seeing, you know, as we're trying to widen 10th Street and the cost of that, and you know, roads in and of itself are never going to be less expensive than they are today to do them, but there's only so much money you can do. So you, again, try to prioritize, you know, 10th Street being widened, and that can only be really widened to Fisk Road. You really can't go beyond that without taking out a tremendous amount of businesses, which wouldn't be right. And then now you've got, you know, Walnut's going to be another one that's going to have to be, that's going to be a relief valve from interstate drive through. So that's certainly going to have to be done. You know, could we do another road, like another interstate drive, maybe on the other side, if you could ever figure out how to get over the water tank hill there to Bunker Hill? And, you know, there's going to be a huge development happening at Willow and I-40, and that could be a relief through there. So there's lots of opportunities. And again, it just takes, you know, you have to plan it, and then it takes money.
As it relates to development, how do you balance the want for development, the want for growth? And this is both commercial and residential. Everybody wants Publix. Everybody wants those shopping centers. But right. At the same time, now you are starting to run into some of those infrastructure issues.
Yeah. You know, while I'd love to take credit for there's a balance because, you know, government doesn't create jobs. Government sets the tone and sets the environment for private business, private investors to come in and do things. And so when you've got an environment that is pleasing to business, they want to invest there. And when you've got a demographic that wants to spend money, then they look at those things. And that's why we've been so successful in retail businesses coming in and all those, and we're going to continue to do that because they see that, and we're continuing to grow, and our household income's going up. And so, you know, we've spent the better part of the last 8 years trying to prove our market demographic and for a few certain retailers, and, you know, those things are going to come to fruition at some point. And so you see all those things, and you say, okay, we want to make sure, but there's a balance to that as we talk about balance, because you know, small businesses are the lifeblood of our economy. And so you certainly want to make sure that you're not incentivizing only big business to come, because we've got to have that environment, because smaller shops, mom and pops, downtown, I mean, that's where I grew up and that kind of thing. And so I want to always, we've tried to always be cognizant of that. I certainly did. And they have their own unique set of challenges, because they're often the accountant, the marketer, the, you know, all that rolled into one. And so trying to balance all that, but the market kind of drives that. I mean, same thing. I've had so many people over the years, well, we've got too many apartments. Well, we really don't, because supply and demand decides. I mean, if people had rather rent than to have a yard, whether it's a condo or apartment, then that's why developers are spending money to build these things, because that's the demand. They're not going to build them if they can't rent them. And so some people get that kind of backwards and twisted and say, well, we've got too many. Well, the market will decide if we have too many. Same thing in business, you know, making sure that we don't have too many of certain types of business. They're not going to invest millions of dollars if they don't believe they can get a return on that investment. And so we have to do the same thing. Long answer to your question, we have to do the same thing with roads. Where can we get the biggest return on our investment? If we build a road here, is that going to create opportunity? And you see that in Wilson County tremendously. You know, 840, look at what that's turned into around through there, of all the warehousing and distribution that's happening there, because those lands were sitting there ready to be developed. And I think we have that same opportunity on 111 and, you know, potentially other areas like that, that's where our growth would be. And then just in our county, growth west. I think we're already seeing that, you know, Baxter's and their business park and Portobello there. And so that area is going to be our biggest growth. And we have opportunity for sewer and water there as well.
Why, Ricky Shelton, during the course of your tenure, have you emphasized quality of life and the work of leisure services?
Well, you know, I think families, when I grew up here, and I was born and raised here, so you went to school, you didn't always have the opportunity to stay here. You thought, well, there's not enough high-paying jobs. That was why I pushed really hard to make sure we had good quality, high-paying jobs. And then things for families to do. And that was really, you know, that was kind of the impetus when we ran and said, let's do a 4th of July celebration. That had stopped. And people were just responded to that so much. And then as I sat there and I said, okay, this is, people really want this. They're craving this type of thing. So let's do more family friendly events. And, you know, we did the, you know, Christmas in the Park and Downtown Ice and Slide the City. And every single time, I would get the encouragement, like, you know, hey, this is what we need. And through, whether it was emails or Facebook messages or whatever that was. And so as I realized people's heart was, you know, hey, we want things to do for our family that are affordable, that we don't have to go to a big city to do, that we have here in our community. And so they really rallied behind that. And so, you know, success breeds success. And I saw that was working. So I just kept trying to come up with more things like that. And, you know, we had a great organization that worked and developed the, you know, we did Dogwood Park back in 2003-04. We bought that, and I was on the council that did that. And then the Heart of the City Playground was built there, and how popular that was, and all-inclusive playground. And then we just, so I said, okay, we've got to keep doing things for families because that's what they want. And so really it was hearing the heart of people telling me these are important to us. And then that just drives, and then it gets more families moving here. You know, the lifeblood of your community is having more young families moving here and wanting to live here, because that breeds success for years and years to come.
You pushed hard on the dog park. You pushed right at the end of your tenure to try to keep the momentum going on this water park,
yes,
whatever it's going to look like.
Yeah, and that was the thing. You know, we talked about it and really couldn't get any momentum with the last council that they wanted to tackle that. And this council had some desire to look at that. So we at least got it to the point, okay, we approved the bond, the bond's ready, we bought some land. And so, you know, if this is something that wants to go forward, here's the opportunity to kick it on. And certainly there's multiple ways that could look. I still believe if I'd had more time, I would love to look at a public-private partnership. You know, could you get a Dollywood-type organization or somebody that does that somewhere? And now we have the land. You do the deal. We'll work out a fair thing, a partnership on it. Still think that's an opportunity. We'll see what this next council wants to do. I mean, the people have spoken about it multiple times. You know, they said that's the number one requested amenity that we don't have that people wanted was some type of water park type facility. And so the committee kind of started talking about an indoor aquatics facility. That really wasn't what was being asked. What was really the community wanted overall was a water park type facility with slides and a lazy river and that kind of thing. Doesn't mean the other one wouldn't work. I just think that has to be a phase two or phase three.
And the expense of the indoor escalates dramatically.
It does. You can use it all year long, but that means your expenses are all year long too. So it's much, much higher. So certainly, you know, having land that you could do both on eventually, starting with the one that's the most requested, and then as momentum builds for that, you could go to that. You know, when you're in leadership, you people say, well, you were elected, you know, you should listen. Well, you do listen. But you can't poll everybody every single time. So part of it has to be a trust. And thankfully, I think the community felt that trust with me because they knew I would listen. And then I tried to get things done that I heard they were wanting. Does everybody always agree with the things I've done and things I said? No, but not a decision I ever made was for any reason other than what I thought was best for Cobble.
Reflecting on the tenure of Ricky Shelton. So we'll take you back to March 2020. When did you get the call about the tornado?
It's about 2 a.m. I think it hit at 1:35. All my stuff was going off, and it was surreal. I immediately turned my radio on, and I heard the first parts of that, and you know, I didn't realize how bad it was at that moment. And then I had a phone call from two friends that, you know, said my sister's house has been hit. And that, at that point, then I got another call that one of our city employees' homes was hit. And at that point, I realized this was pretty big. And I got dressed and left my house a little after 2 a.m. to go to the emergency operations center. And when I pulled out, I live, you know, probably 6 miles away. There was debris all over my street and in my yard, 6 miles away. And I thought, what in the world? And it was just such a surreal feeling. I get to the emergency operations center, Randy Porter and I and Tyler Smith were the first ones there. And not knowing, it was still dark, but then all the radios and all the monitors and everybody's talking about, we're searching and it became the most traumatic thing I've ever been a part of. And after that, if you look back, it is probably the most amazing thing to witness and be a part of the response in our community and the response of everyone else. So many emotions. I still get emotional thinking about it. You know, Randy and I immediately with your help and others in the media trying to you know, communicate to people, because I've always found people, they don't have to lock your message. They just need to hear something. They need to know something, because the unknown is the worst. That's where people start filling in blanks, and that's oftentimes wrong. And so as we did that, and communicating, doing the Facebook Lives that we were doing, and the interviews with you, and all those things, and trying to tell the story of, you know, we don't know, but here's what we know so far, and trying to give some reassurance. And I tell you, you know, I can't say enough about Brandon Smith, Tyler Smith, and the leadership in that EOC, Emergency Operations Center. And you know, as over that day it grew, and the number of all of us there, and I was there basically almost 48 hours with just a few hours here and there at home, and Randy as well, and leading that. And of course, Randy having that amazing experience from emergency services all those years, and he was just a natural at that, and just being there to support him with him. And I just took it upon my shoulders. I mean, this is my town, you know, and it had been hit the hardest ever. And, you know, 19 of our citizens died, and I knew probably almost half of them myself. And just took it so, it just hit me really personally. But then through that, and the amazing, you know, coordinating that, and then the amazing response of the citizens, and then just the around the region, and then across the country with physical help and monetary help and all those things. It's just, it was a gratifying, tiring, gratifying, I mean, any adjective you want to use, it pretty much encompassed that over that period of time, that probably 2 weeks for sure.
When was the first time that you saw the Highway 70 corridor?
Randy and I actually went, I was trying to remember, we went that morning, we went twice that day, but that morning we got on a Erlanger helicopter, landed at the EOC, and he and I went up and saw it. That was probably at 9:30 that morning. It was indescribable. Looked like a bomb had gone off for 5 miles, 4 miles stretch. Craziest thing I'd ever seen. And gut-wrenching, just shock. I mean, all the words, and I can't imagine what it was like being on the ground with those. And I talk to a lot of those people, and I hear their stories, and I can't even imagine being in it, but just seeing it from there. And we landed, they got a call, so we landed at the hospital, there was a piece of roof sitting in the parking lot at the hospital that was probably 10 feet long by about 5 feet wide. A piece of roof sitting in the parking lot about 20 yards from where the helipad is. And, you know, as we found out later, that was headed right for the hospital in Tech. Had that not, it split, and a smaller one, it ventured off, and it rose up, and what a devastation that'd be, you know. And then the hospital ended up treating, you know, 93 people, and just an amazing show of response that all treated that day and triaged and out to the places that needed to go, and yeah, just it's crazy.
Yeah, in your seat where you're sitting right now, the Chrissy Hurley, who was the Weather Service meteorologist who came to Cookeville that day to see the damage and try to evaluate what has happened. She walked into the studio that afternoon and she said, Cookeville was lucky. And tears were rolling down her face. And I'm kind of sitting here saying, what do you mean lucky? We just lost 19 people. And she said that had there a storm developed right over Prescott South.
Mm-hmm.
And stole the energy from that storm, but it was on the way
yeah.
to Tech and Cookeville Regional.
I know. I mean, what would we be saying? You know, what would that have looked like? I mean, it's hard to even imagine. I mean, we know how bad that was, and I can't even imagine what it would have been if it had direct hit at the hospital or Tech. And yeah.
How did the whole dynamic of you and Randy Porter just putting it in gear and communicating with the public? I mean, where did that, had you ever talked about it?
No.
Was it in a plan somewhere that our mayors are going to do this?
It was not. It was, you know, we're great friends and have been great friends all of our life. And when we got elected, we said, you know, we're going to work together and we're going to do everything. And there's never been any jealousy or any, you know, well, you do, you know, you're doing that. I don't want you to do, I want to say, we always try to do stuff together. Doesn't matter if he says it first, I say it, it don't matter. We share stuff with each other. And, you know, I just knew I wanted to do everything I could to help our city. And he was doing everything he could to help our county. And I knew I just let him naturally be like the first lead, because that was his thing. I mean, he did the emergency services, but I'd been around it with my dad and everything. And so, you know, I know also understand infrastructure and how to lead and get services done. And so, you know, we both had our little lane, and then I, you know, marketing and communications kind of my thing. And so I, you know, we just, I don't remember which one, who said to what, but I said, you know, we got several requests for interviews. We did an interview with you that morning. We started getting requests from around the country. I don't remember if I said it or he said it. And we're like, you know, we need to do Facebook Live. We need to just start doing our own, like, people want to know. And so I don't remember who said what. That whole thing was a blur. But, you know, if you ask him, he'd probably say I said it, and I'll just go ahead and say he said it, and so we'll just give credit to each other. How's that?
And then 2 weeks later, you're shoved into the middle of the greatest health crisis this country's ever seen?
Crazy. Yeah, you know, certainly no blueprint for that. No one's ever seen that. And now all of a sudden you're trying to manage a tornado recovery in the midst of a pandemic, with things getting shut down or altered, and then a whole another political dynamic happening where you should do this or you shouldn't do that, or you should be getting this or that, and trying to balance that and keep your community moving and positive, and when all of it is completely unknown. And I guess I've told people before, I guess books will be written whether it was right or wrong, the responses and or the, you know, what was done. That's up for judgment another day, I guess. I think our community fared as well as you could. I think Tennessee fared remarkably well overall. Certainly a lot of things probably not done necessarily exactly right, or but we didn't know. And so you were trying to go, you're trying to take all the data and knowledge you have of how you've done other things and then apply it to that. And it really didn't apply very well. So you're trying to, you know, pivot on the fly. And I think now, since especially recovery for businesses and governments and everything else, what's unique is there's really no right or wrong to this because we don't know. And it's, you really can't, you can't say, okay, well, this is over, let's go back to normal, because there isn't a normal now. What used to be normal, it can't be the same. So now you got to figure out, what do we need to do? What needs to happen now under this new deal that we've got, the new expectation of things, the supply chain issues, all these things. I just think we're in a very very interesting time for all businesses, governments, and everybody else trying to figure out what this looks like going forward.
I'm curious, Ricky Shelton, that just the fatigue, did you realize how tired you were? Because you literally went from one to the next.
Yes, and I lost a tremendous amount of weight through that stress. And, you know, I've said this, and I don't think Randy ever did either, but probably we should have gotten some counseling, some help through that. And I look now, as I've been over the last little bit preparing kind of what my words I want to say on August 18th, on the last night of my council, my farewell speech, if you will, and like I can't read it for getting emotional. And so that's part of it, because I love what I have done. Part of it is fatigue. Part of it is I don't know. There's a lot. I have so many emotions. And emotions usually are born from caring for something, and I care.
You fast forward to months later, and you take a new position, and things are said about you and questioned about you and your morals and the things that you believe. How hard was that?
It was super hard, and I had to pray a lot about my response, and I'm proud I never responded harshly or negatively to people because of it, but it was one of the hardest things. You know, when you live your life a certain way, you conduct yourself a certain way, you conduct business a certain way, you've been mayor a certain way, and you try to put the community first, put people first, be honest and trustworthy, and all that kind of gets called into question when they're questioning motives or intent or what. And so it was frustrating, it was maddening, it was hurtful, and you know, a waste of honestly time, energy, mental capacity. When you know, I wished, I'm glad it turned out like it did. It was proven 6 attorneys later, nothing was done wrong, which is what I knew before I ever took the job, because the 2 city attorneys said that, the hospital attorney said that, the hospital hired an attorney that said that, I hired an attorney to make sure, and then the council felt like they had to hire an attorney to try to, I don't know if they were trying to prove it, that it was okay, or trying to prove that I did something wrong, but, you know, 6 attorneys arrived at the same conclusion. And so through all that, certainly it makes you question a lot of things, but I'm thankful that part's over, you know, time will tell whether I saw some funny quotes throughout the process. You know, I've got to let God handle this, because if I handle it, I might go to jail. I thought that was one of them. So, but anyway, I'm certainly not making light of it. It's at this point, you can, to your point, the tornado, the pandemic, and then that over the last, you know, 20 months or 20, a little over 20 months, it's been really, really emotionally, mentally exhausting.
Is there anything in that, call it a 6-week period, that you wish you would have done differently?
Which 6-week period?
Around the job and the question.
Oh, no. No, didn't do anything. Nothing was done wrong. Wouldn't change how we did it. It was all above board. And, you know, I made great strides in what I've done there at the medical center, and hope to continue to do, and been able to accomplish there, and all the things that are, you know, we're really kind of revamping and reshaping the things that I've been honored to be responsible for, you know, plant facilities and construction and marketing, communications, physician outreach and recruitment. We had the largest number of physicians recruited in 1 year this past year. You know, I have a great recruiter, and we just kind of revamped how we did that. We launched a new website at the hospital. It's a state-of-the-art website. I'd put it up against any hospital in the entire country. My marketing communications team, very small, but we got that done. And, you know, we're just putting new processes in place. And so I'm very proud of that. I've got protective services and safety and security and life safety there at the hospital. And all those things, you were advancing. So I've been able to utilize my skill sets that I've learned over the years in business and in other things and in government, and kind of apply principles in that, and hopefully to make the medical center. It's a phenomenal asset for our region, but just to continue to make it even better.
To step back to part of where we started, how hard was all of that on your family?
It was the hardest. It was the hardest thing to. People have no idea, that aren't in, first of all, in public life, but then to have that exponentially said, it was extremely difficult. And, again, through prayer and faith and our, you know, church family and a few close friends, helping us get through that. And, just, you know, that pretty much was the key.
Was there ever a point in it where you said, this is not what I signed up for?
Oh, I mean, yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, when you go through things like that, you start questioning, you know, well, did I do something? What is this about? And I know the Bible talks about going through fires and making you stronger and preparing you for other things. And so God's prepared me for a lot of things. And so, you know, I take this last, you know, since March of 2020, and I'm like, okay, I don't know what all you want me to do, Lord, but I have been in the midst of a lot of fires. And so whatever that is, I believe I'm ready. Still hurts, still is aggravation. Still, you know, sometimes you realize there are still detractors that are trying to do things for whatever reason. I really attribute most of it to jealousy and, you know, cancel culture that we see in the world today, where people that are, you know, either jealous of you as a person or your family or your position or what you've achieved or what you've tried to live or how you've tried to be, and they take the opportunity to take shots at you and diminish you or diminish your character or your worth. And, you know, I know it said I'm not who they say I am. I'm who God says I am. And so I have no regrets over the things I've done, the decisions I've made, and the things I've been a part of over my political career and over my certainly my work life either. I always try to do things the right way for the right reasons, because that's what my parents taught me, and I value that.
Ricky Shelton, what is the most fun part of being mayor?
You know, we've had been able to meet a lot of really cool people that come through. You know, Paula Deen at a book signing, Tim Tebow, golly, there's been so many. I'd have to think a little bit longer, because I've been so clouded by the last 24. It seems the last 24 months have felt like about 6 years, and then the first 6 years are hard to remember. But, you know, meeting people, seeing your community transform, seeing the joy in, you know, after you establish some events. And I remember the first year we did, you know, the Christmas tree lighting, and you know, 5,000 people there, and you know, 400 kids singing, and how cool. I mean, it's like a Hallmark moment. That was like a seminal moment. The first year we did that, I thought, how cool is this? And, you know, because you talk about doing something like that, you don't know if people will really jump in on it or not. We were elected in August. We did the tree lighting. The tree was just a tree in front of CPAC. There was probably, you know, 50 or 75 people there. I'm like, that I hearken back to, I thought, man, this we should do something bigger than this. And then literally, I tell you, the Lord put it on my heart. It should be way more than a tree lighting. And so I called 10 pastors. I said, hey, we sat around a table and said, what do you think about this? Yeah, and so that launched Christmas in the Park. And, you know, we bought the big 40-foot tall tree. And that first year when we did it and had all those kids singing. And it was chaos, but, you know, it was a good chaos. And so then you realize, all right, this is something that is going to be cool. And so we, you know, we did that for 7 years, and then same thing, we launched, you know, 4th of July, and saw the joy that brought, and then we just continued to make that bigger and bigger and bigger. And we did the downtown ice. I remember when we said we really should do ice skating, and the ice skating rink was like $125,000 to bring. So we bring in the synthetic ice. You know, it's basically plastic that
plastic.
You put down
cold plastic
that you put in, you wear, and it's got this coating on it, and you put legitimate shoes on. There was probably 2,000 or 3,000 people there to do that, and it was so cool. And to see people respond to things like that, and that drives you to do more. It drives me to do more when I see people that actually enjoy it and appreciate it. And then the opportunities I've had to speak at like schools, and to reading during like Dr. Seuss Week and things like that. And I love to speak. I spoke to different ages before, but I love the little ones, because they'll say, you know, they're the truth speakers. You know, they'll say the things that are on their mind, and you know, some of the questions. You know, do you get a big house? Do you have a limo driver? You know, the silly stuff. Do you make $1 million? You know, the funny stuff like that. But it's always so. I, you know, just to say that I saw the fireworks, or I did the slide, and I love, you know, that's the kind of stuff, the through the eyes and hearts of children to see that. And that's been one of the things that's driven me to continue to do more things as well.
One of the questions that I get most often about Ricky Shelton is the mayor position a jumping off spot? So in other words, does he want to run for the legislature? Does he want to run for Congress? Is there more in there?
I mean, I've always had a desire to do this. I enjoy doing it. I enjoy doing it much more than my wife enjoys me doing it. You know, in 2006, I was on the council and was finishing up that in 2010, and that's when I really thought I was led to run for state representative, and was going to run. At that time, I think Henry Fincher was the state representative, and Ron Williams was, and I were on the council together, and I was really, I had people, hey, you should run, we'll support you. I had some folks in Nashville willing to, you know, take care of the campaign and do all the things, and I thought I was being led there. My wife never could get satisfied with it, never could feel that was the right thing to do, and I shortly thereafter announced I wasn't going to run, and Ryan announced he did. And of course, he's now been serving for 12 years. And as I look back, I see that, you know, at the time my job, I was going west every day, and my job a few months later changed and was going east. And then my parents became sick, and about a year later, they died within, you know, 60 days of each other. And so I step back and I look back at that, and I'm like, well, obviously that wasn't the right time. That wasn't what I was supposed to do. So what the voice my wife heard was correct. And so that's kind of helped me have faith in knowing what I'm supposed to do and when I'm supposed to do it, because you often don't see the path in front of you. It's when you can stop and turn around and see what you did or didn't do or what you missed that, you know, that's kind of, and so that's helped me propel me forward to when I ran again in 2014, again, didn't even know if I'd get elected, and ended up winning. And I'm like, wow, okay, I really wanted to be mayor. And then in 2000, when I ran in 2006, I wasn't, so obviously wasn't ready. And then I didn't even know if I'd get didn't even, if I would get a seat in 2014, and then I became mayor. So it's the reflection of looking back on that and of how you're prepared. And so I have a desire to still serve. I think I have a gift for that. I think I have a gifting in leading and serving like that. Where it will be used, I don't know. I want to be open to that, and not just be, I'm going to do this for sure. But I don't want to, I certainly don't want to say never. But it will be a conversation with my family. And I think that's more so now, especially because of what we have been through, of seeing what it can do to your family and what it can do to your family dynamic, and to make sure that you know, everybody needs to be on that same page. Yep.
Finally, what do you want to say to the people of Cookeville?
Well, I'll say it's been a true honor. You know, 20 years ago, I was elected to council and served 8 years, and then to have the honor and privilege to serve your hometown, you know, born and raised here, never left. It's the only town I've ever called home, and so it's been such an amazing honor. All the, you know, the thousands of people that I've met and talked to, the heart of that, of getting messages and hearing people tell me things, that's what drove me. That's what drove me to never give up, not give in, to push harder, to push longer, to work harder, to do more, to make a difference, to lead, and try to make it like, you know, I was driven for people to say, you know, well, I didn't even know who the mayor was before. I mean, you've worked harder than anybody. That's what makes me work harder, is hearing that. And so, but I never take for granted, the people that have helped along the way, the, you know, we have an amazing group of department, heads, and city manager James Mills, and I've actually had three city managers in, while I've been in office, but they do such a good job. And the administrative function of the way it's set up is, you know, the city manager does takes care of the administrative duties. And so the mayor and council doesn't really have any of those duties, but what they do, what they should have and do is vision and desire and passion of how they, you know, to move your community forward, and then let those administrators take care of that and keep the politics out of the hiring. And then we've tried to do that, but just again, to thank the community and thank the citizens. And, you know, when businesses come here and they say, man, the people here are great and the workers here are great, that is what makes our community great, is the people. And I've been blessed and thankful and to serve. And so, as I say bye for now, certainly hope to, again, have the opportunity one day to be a part. And we'll certainly still be involved in the community in whatever way. I'm going to, you know, people have come to know and trust my Facebook and Instagram pages and you know, the Better Cookeville that we have established, and I intend to utilize that to continue to promote and talk and share good news in the community. So I'm going to continue to use those things and try to keep Better Cookeville at the forefront, to continue events and maybe add some other things that we haven't done before. Mayor Porter and I will be partnering and continuing Red, White, and Boom, and you know, probably some new events as well. So I just say thank you, and I want to thank you too, Larry, for your partnership. You know, I threw this crazy idea about Red, White, and Boom out to you. It was unknown, untested, and you said, "I'm in." Didn't hesitate, and you've been that way the whole time. And I think we've grown it into something really cool. And it wouldn't be possible without partnerships and friendships as well. But partnerships of people, you know, financially saying, "I'll support that." And then we take that and blossom it into something much bigger, and then promoting it like you do on all the stations. And so I'm thankful for your partnership and friendship as well, Larry, throughout the years, and look forward to what we do in the future.
Ricky Shelton's final meeting as mayor comes Thursday night. I'm Larry Stone. Thanks for joining us.